well-regulated militia being necessary to the security of a free state, the right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. I am so glad to be back behind the microphone once again. Hopefully, back to a normal schedule here after a chaotic August and early September. Thanks again for everybody who has been sharing your thoughts and your prayers with me. I can tell you that Miss E has been out of the hospital for a week and a half now. She seems to be slowly making a recovery, not back to where she needs to be, but she is hopefully getting there, knock on wood, fingers crossed, and everything else. We'll keep you updated, but thank you again for all of the thoughts and prayers. So on today's program, we're going to be talking about something that's going on out in California, the continued deprivation of our right to keep and bear arms through the charging of what I would consider to be excessive fees. You know, in the Bruin decision, the Supreme Court said that, shall issue concealed carry licensing regimes, those are presumptively constitutional, but it is said that there are some things that could make even a shall issue system run afoul of the Second Amendment. One of the things that they mentioned, lengthy delays in processing applications. And we've seen that in California jurisdictions as well, right? In L.A., L.A. County taking over a year to process concealed carry applications. And so far, the courts have said, well, that's just fine. It's just, the cost that you must bear in order to exercise your fundamental right. But the Supreme Court also said that excessive fees could also run afoul of a shall issue system. So if you are forced to pay, now the court didn't define what excessive was, right? But if you are, I would say, forced to pay hundreds of dollars, maybe even four figures, in order to exercise a fundamental constitutional right, there's a problem. And in California, there are a lot of problems. So you've had the lawsuit, CRPA versus LASD, right? California Rifle and Pistol Association versus LA Sheriff's Department. Also suing the city of La Vergne, California, again, over its fees. But those are not the only jurisdictions where we are seeing problems like this arise. Up in the Bay Area, the city of Morgan Hill is the latest to hike its fees for concealed carry applications. As the East Bay Times reports, the move is sparking concerns over Second Amendment rights. The city council unanimously voted last week to approve concealed carry renewal fees that will hike the cost to several times higher than those of nearby jurisdictions, according to the East Bay Times. Well, city staff argue that this simply covers the cost of processing applications, some residents anyway, raising concerns that the fees are limiting access to their Second Amendment rights. Councilmember Gino Borgioli said it's the people's right to bear arms. We want to make it as reasonable as possible for our citizens to do a concealed carry permit. By the way, if this was approved unanimously, then presumably Gino Borgioli had no issue with the new fees. Now, interestingly enough, the East Bay Times doesn't actually say what the initial fees are. They talk about raising the cost of renewals. They write that the new fee comes a year and a half after the city first approved a plan to process concealed carry applications in April 2023. But in anticipation of renewals, which take place every 2 years, the city has proposed a $540 fee that you have to pay every 2 years to cover the cost for the police officers involved in processing renewal applications. The new rate, as the East Bay Times reports, dwarfs nearby jurisdictions, more than double that of Santa Clara County, which charges $187 for a renewal, more than seven times what Monterey County charges at $77, which I would say is a much more reasonable renewal fee. City of San Jose charges just $25 for renewal, but they charge almost $1,400 for an initial application. Now, Morgan Hill charges about $800 for an initial application, both of which I think are far too high. Morgan Hill resident Kyle Merritt said that's a big, big difference. Noted that the renewal process also involves an 8-hour training course, which can cost hundreds of dollars, saying it is cost prohibitive for a constitutional right. Now, keep in mind, the initial application, you have to take a 16-hour training course. And then every 2 years, as part of your renewal process, you have to take another 8-hour training course. So again, Kyle Merritt's right. You're not only going to be out hundreds of dollars for that training course and then an additional hundreds of dollars to renew that license, but you're also having to give up your time in order to satisfy the whims of the state, or in this case, the whims of the city of Morgan Hill. Now, council members poo-pooed the objections of these residents. We said, listen, you're pricing us out of a right. One of the individuals on the city council, Renee Spring, argued that residents always have the option to go to the sheriff's office. I don't think we should ask the huge majority of citizens who will never make use of these permits to subsidize those who request them, said Spring. If some think the fees of the city of Morgan Hill are too high, well, you're welcome to go somewhere else for a permit. The problem is that, according to the county officials, if you have applied for a license through Morgan Hill, through the local police department, and then you try to get it renewed through the county, you can't. It doesn't work that way. You have to then apply for a brand new carry permit through the county instead of the city of Morgan Hill. Now, I understand this argument of, well, we shouldn't be asking people to be subsidizing other people's exercise of a right. Cool. Except that California does that all the time, right? More importantly, if you don't think that we should be forcing people to help defray the cost of exercising a constitutionally protected right, then maybe the answer is to reduce the cost of exercising that constitutionally protected right in the first place. Maybe it shouldn't cost $800 to apply for a Second Amendment permission slip. Again, it's not like you have to fork over $800 before you go to a church of your choosing every Sunday in Morgan Hill. You don't have to pay $800 for a First Amendment permit in order to visit bookstores and to purchase a magazine or a couple of novels. Nope. Only when it comes to your right to keep and bear arms are we subjected to these types of outrageous fees tied again to the exercise of a constitutionally protected right. Because if you don't have that permission slip and you carry a firearm in California, well, you could be looking at prison time. Maybe not on a first offense. But maybe. You never really know. It's kind of up to the prosecutor's discretion there. As the East Bay Times reports, the new fee comes after the passage of California's SB 2 last year, which allowed jurisdictions to raise prices for fees to match the cost of labor to process them. And one city council member in Morgan Hill says he expects other nearby jurisdictions to follow suit. He says, I do think it's a trend. We were one of the first cities, at least in our local area, to update our policies. My expectation is that other cities will be revisiting their fees as well. So what kind of chilling effect is this having? Not just the renewals, but the initial cost to apply for a license in Morgan Hill. East Bay Times reports that since the city began processing concealed carry applications in April of 2023, 24 permits have been approved. Four more are currently being processed, four others rejected. City Attorney Donald Larkin says the policy that we adopted seems to be working. People who feel the need to have a concealed carry permit are getting their permits. No. Because you don't know how many people have felt the need to apply for a permit, but have been thwarted because of the excessive cost. Now, I looked up the population of Morgan Hill, California. It's about 44,000 people. Roughly, let's say 13,000 or so are under the age of 21. So that still leaves you about 31,000 adults in Morgan Hill. If 5% of the population had sought and received a concealed carry permit, which is about average when you look at states that have shall issue regimes, it's about 5% of the population. Some states are higher, some states are a little bit lower, but 5% is a pretty good average. You'd be looking at about 1,500 concealed carry permits in Morgan Hill, not 24, with another four pending and then four applications that were rejected. Again, there's a big difference between 24 permits, and let's go ahead and say 28. Let's say that all four of those that are in the pipeline are going to be approved. 28 permits to, again, roughly 1,500 permits, that's a huge difference. And the fact that there are only a couple of dozen concealed carry holders in Morgan Hill tells me that no, the policy that the city's adopted isn't working. People who feel the need to have a concealed carry permit are not getting their permits. Because if they were, the numbers would be a lot higher than what we're seeing here in Morgan Hill. And as I mentioned, unfortunately, the courts in California have not been particularly receptive, at least to date, the argument that some residents are being priced out of their right to keep and bear arms through these excessive fees. Even though the Supreme Court has specifically said, if you're charging too much money, well, that might run afoul of people's constitutional rights. The argument that, well, we're only paying for the cost of labor. Let me ask you this. When we call 911 and we say someone's trying to break into our home or we need police there right away, are we charged for their labor when police show up? Do we get a bill when we utilize law enforcement services? I don't think so. Not even in California do you get a bill when you call 911 and police come out to your house. Right? Police are doing their job. We pay for public safety through our taxes. So why, when law enforcement is tasked with the job of processing concealed carry applications, why are those applicants told, hey, you have to pay 100% of the cost? That seems a little weird to me, a little different, right? I mean, again, this is something that is a law enforcement duty, right? They are charged with processing these applications. So why are those costs not folded into the public safety budget? Why instead are the applicants expected to pay 100% of the costs? And how do we know that those costs aren't being inflated as a way, again, of stopping people from applying for their concealed carry permit in the first place? Because that to me seems like a really easy way to chill the exercise of a constitutionally protected right. By, again, so, well, I mean, it doesn't cost us $800 to process these applications. By the way, why does it cost $800-some-odd for law enforcement to process an initial application, but $500-and-something to process a renewal? Why is it so much more expensive to process an application in Morgan Hill than it is in Monterey County? Seems to me like Morgan Hill officials should be able to explain that incredible difference in order to justify these fees. But they aren't. And I suspect they can't, because again, I think at the end of the day, this isn't about recouping the costs of processing these applications. It is about chilling the exercise of a fundamental civil right. So the good news is that Los Angeles CRPA versus LASD does continue in the courts. There is the opportunity for the lower court decision to be overturned and for some of these excessive fees to be curbed. But it's not going to be a quick process. It's not going to be an easy process. And unfortunately, I don't think we're going to see any relief coming from Sacramento anytime soon. And in the meantime, we may very well see more jurisdictions like Morgan Hill try to put the shaft to gun owners or would-be gun owners by making it cost prohibitive to exercise their right to keep and bear arms. All right, before we get to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report, let's talk about this for a second. Economists are warning us that massive tax hikes could hit your IRA and 401k hard. With inflation rising and global uncertainty, it is no wonder that central banks and many Americans are turning to gold. Now, if you haven't thought about gold yet, now's the time. Trust Priority Gold to help you diversify your savings with gold and silver. Text GOLD into 800-405-GOLD for a free gold info guide and see if you qualify for free shipping and storage. Experts agree physical gold is one of the best ways to fortify your savings. Act now to get your portfolio working for you while the market is golden. Text GOLD into 800-405-GOLD to learn more. That is GOLD into 800-405-GOLD. Now let's turn our attention to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report. We'll start there. Not a true recidivist story, but still one of those sentences that just leaves you scratching your heads. A student at Kansas, University of Kansas, sentenced to 32 months behind bars, all of which was suspended to probation for a battery and burglary case that was originally charged as rape. Yeah. So we've got the plea deal. We've got the soft-on-crime sentence here. The student in this case, 19-year-old Esteban Levi Plunkett, charged with rape in connection with an incident that happened last October. His defense attorney, Jessica Glendinning, during last Friday's sentencing in Douglas County District Court, said, well, he did make some incredibly bad decisions that night, telling the court that the incident involved college students, alcohol, and marijuana. No details about the incident were addressed during the sentencing, according to the Lawrence Journal-World. The victim was involved in the negotiations that led to the plea deal, according to the senior district attorney, Ricardo Leal, who said the victim did not want to testify and did not want her victim impact statement read into the record. She instead had it read silently by the judge, Stacey Donovan, before she pronounced her sentence. Defense attorney also told the court that the suspect in this case, Mr. Plunkett, was in treatment for substance abuse. And the judge said that such a treatment program is more likely than prison to prevent Plunkett from committing similar crimes in the future. She also said she took into account Plunkett's age and the, quote, wishes of the victim. Plunkett turned 20 on Saturday, but the judge told him, you're a teenager. Also a legal adult, but yeah, you're a teenager. Donovan said, you made some very, very serious mistakes due in no small part to your addiction. What you've done has hurt another human being very much. And then sentenced Plunkett to 32 months for the aggravated battery count, 12 months for the burglary count, ordering those sentences to run concurrently. And then she suspended the entirety of the sentence to 3 years probation, told Plunkett he had to pay $713 in costs and fees, 40 hours of community service, and has to register as a sex offender, but only for the duration of his probation. So again, what was once charged as a rape, a college student, pled down to aggravated battery, residential burglary, and no time whatsoever behind bars for the suspect. Today's armed citizen story from Chicago, where a concealed carry holder shot an intruder trying to climb through her daughter's window over the weekend. Now, I don't know why necessarily the armed citizen here was highlighted as a concealed carry holder. You don't need a concealed carry license to have a firearm in your home, but whatever. According to the Chicago Police Department, officers responded to a report of a person shot around 10:45 Saturday night. They found a man who was initially believed to be the victim of a shooting with a gunshot wound to his leg, but they quickly learned that the victim was actually a suspect in this case who tried to break into a nearby home and was shot by the homeowner. The woman, who did not want to be identified, talked to WGN News and said, I'm just super shaken up. I'm a single mom. I live here with my children, so that's the last thing I expect, you know, for someone to try to come in on my daughter. It's just like a nightmare that came true. She said that she had been out celebrating her birthday with her family. She got back home. She said as her daughter was in the bathroom showering, she said a guy like put his hand through the window and she ran out yelling, Mom, somebody's coming through my room. Somebody's coming through my window. She said, I just went into action when I actually saw the guy. He was still hanging on her window and he just looked at me and I said, I've got a gun. I'm going to shoot. And I fired a shot. I didn't even know he was hit till the police came. The woman said that she has owned the firearm for many years, says it was the first time she's ever actually had to use it. She said, I didn't want anything to happen to them at all. She said, I'd rather it happen to me before something happens to them, meaning her kids. She said she didn't know the suspect. Neighbors in the area say that they're a little concerned after hearing what happened. Gideon Charles, who lived in the neighborhood for a little more than a decade, says it's something I've never seen before in my life. It's a shock to me because this is a very quiet neighborhood. Ron Miller's lived in the neighborhood for about a decade. He says you hear about it all the time, but it's somewhere else. When it's right in front of you, it's pretty concerning. It's Chicago, and we're not under siege or anything like that, but it all concerns me. I certainly prefer for us to have a harmonious community. Well, I think we all do, right? We'd all like to live in a world where we don't have to worry about people trying to climb in through our windows, trying to assault us over a road rage incident. Or, you know, randomly target individuals because of some sickness in the head. That unfortunately is not the world that we live in. And in Chicago, while there are some neighborhoods that are relatively low crime, the city itself is hardly crime free. And I'm glad that this woman was able to protect herself and her kids from harm this past weekend. Sounds like some of her neighbors are as well. Another resident identified as Haley told the WGN, it's got to feel empowering that she's able to protect herself in her home. So I hope that she has some solace in that. It just goes to show you, you shouldn't be breaking into people's homes. No, you shouldn't. And it shouldn't take the prospect of being shot to dissuade people from doing so. But at least in this case, again, the woman and her kids are okay. Finally today, our good deed of the day, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing. A couple of good Samaritans in Florida who helped save a man after his truck went into the water. But, you know, this is not the first time that we have covered this type of good deed in Florida. I don't know what it is that makes these canals and waterways so attractive to motor vehicles. But thankfully, this past Saturday, a individual who ended up in the water in his sinking truck, saved by two good Samaritans who jumped into the water. This was on the Panetta Causeway. Multiple 911 callers dialed up authorities and told them they saw a pickup crash through the guardrail on the causeway and then plummet into the water. When Deputy Bradley McLaughlin got to the truck there in Brevard County, he found the driver's lower body was stuck in the cab, but he also saw two individuals who were holding the driver's head above the water, partially out of the vehicle. Ariana Ebert and Don Cobb are their names. River County Sheriff Wayne Ivey said as the car continued to sink, they did what they could to keep his head above the water and attempted to provide life-saving measures. At one point, Ariana even dove under the water to see if she could free him. Deputy James Basile soon joined in the rescue efforts. As he entered the water, the driver was finally able to be pulled from the sinking car. They then pulled the man to shore. Deputy Noah Kane began CPR. He was a driver, taken to a local hospital. At last report, he is in the ICU, but he did have a pulse when he got to the scene. The only occupant of the truck, Sheriff Ivey said, our deputies trained to jump into action in emergency situations. We would never ask citizens to put their own lives at risk, but he said to see them selflessly try to save someone in a truly scary situation shows the kind of people that make up Brevard County. I would say not just Brevard County. Again, you can find these types of Good Samaritans all across the country. Those individuals who step up in a time of need to do what they can for others. We see this with armed citizens. We also see this, again, when it doesn't come to, you know, preventing a crime, but just, you know, saving somebody from choking, saving somebody from drowning, saving somebody from a house fire. There are people out there who do act and respond quickly when someone is in danger. And for these two individuals there in Brevard County, Florida, in the right place, at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing to save the life of a stranger, Ariana Ebert and Don Cobb, we thank you for your very, very good deed. All right, that is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms Cam & Company. Again, I want to thank you for your patience over the past, like, month, I guess, with all of the craziness that's been going on. Hopefully, we are going to get back to more of a routine here, not only on the show, but in the personal life as well. Looking forward to having more guests join us here on Cam & Company in the days ahead. And again, I just want to thank you for your patience. It has been a pretty challenging time, and there may be more challenges to come, quite honestly, but we'll get through it. And your thoughts and prayers are certainly warmly appreciated. So thank you again. All right, we will be back tomorrow, but be sure to check out BearingArms.com. Throughout the day, we're keeping up to date on all the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation, including the upcoming debate between Donald Trump and Kamala Harris, the latest on the high school shooting in Georgia, and the calls for gun control. We've got litigation to talk about. We've got legislation to talk about. All waiting for you there at BearingArms.com. If you like what you see, I would encourage you to become a VIP or VIP Gold member. Just use the promo code SAVEAMERICA, and you can get a significant savings on your VIP or VIP Gold membership. You get exclusive content, you get an ad-free experience, but you'll also be supporting the independent pro-secondary journalism that we're doing. At Bearing Arms, your support is greatly appreciated. So thank you again. Have a great rest of your Monday. As good as a Monday can be. I look forward to seeing you back here tomorrow. Until then, be well. Be safe.